This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Congress is out of time to pass an extended Obamacare subsidies bill. The House is going home for the holidays. Yesterday, House Republicans passed a partisan package of health care policies designed to provide a conservative alternative to extending the expiring Obamacare subsidies. That legislation has little chance of passing through the Senate, so it was mainly just a gesture, and it did not address the cost cliff that's expected to hit 22 million Americans when the ACA tax credits sunset at the end of the year. But then Republicans on their chat channels are using this as a way to combat Democratic messaging. But this is all cold comfort to the millions of Americans who are expected to lose their health care coverage because they won't be able to afford the ACA anymore. Also, there are millions of others who will be able to go into the ACA, but they'll be paying more for a plan that will give them worse coverage. So there's a lot going on here, and to help us figure it out, we're joined by Elizabeth Pancotti, Managing Director of Policy and Advocacy at Groundwork Collaborative. And Elizabeth, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what's it look like right now? What's the prognosis for these subsidies? They're just going to not be there at the end of the year. Is that it?
So the way that things will play out over the next few weeks are that the enhanced subsidies expire at the end of the calendar year. Open enrollment runs through January 15th, and folks can sign up for coverage that starts on February 1st. But as of December 15th, we have passed the deadline for signing up for coverage that would start on January 1st. Some subsidies, kind of the baseline level, will be available to folks, but that primarily helps with bronze level plans, which typically have either very limited networks of hospitals, doctors, providers, and also very high out-of-pocket costs. Those are the plans with high deductibles, high out-of-pocket maximums, et cetera. Right now, the House has started the last vote series of the year, and they are planning to head out of town without taking a vote on extending those Affordable Care Act subsidies. Though yesterday, through kind of a different process, a petition was able to get a majority of signatures from House members, teeing that up for a vote in January when the House returns.
And that was an act of rebellion. You know, that was
yes. There were a handful of Republicans who kind of after exasperation with Republican leadership in the House, they had said we really want to vote on either an extension, or they had a couple of other proposals, and the speaker declined to give that to them. And so those moderates crossed the aisle to sign that petition with Democrats.
Right, because they're freaking out. They know that these are Republicans who are in swing districts like in Pennsylvania, who are saying if they get these bills, a lot of people don't pay attention to this type of stuff until they have to write a check or look at it, you know, they have to pay for it. And when they see it, they're going to say, what is going on here? And they're going to take it out on their local congressperson saying, why did you do this to me?
That's exactly right. I mean, the Republican talking point for the last few weeks has been that Democrats created this mess by passing the Affordable Care Act 15 years ago, that Democrats enhanced these subsidies for COVID and COVID is over. But I think there's two points here. The reality is that in just 13 days, millions of Americans will have to pay, in some cases, triple, quadruple what they were paying this year for health insurance. And it's not like, you know, that right now things are rosy. There are so many Americans where health insurance is completely unaffordable. My mom lives in Dallas. She works for a small business. She works for a doctor's office, actually. And she pays $900 a month for her health insurance.
How is that even workable? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you concerned about what's happening with the Affordable Care Act, what you're going to have to pay for it? Can you live without it? What does that look like? I'd love to hear from you. Help us find out how this is actually impacting people's day-to-day lives, 833-877-8255. So, Elizabeth, you brought up, so I'm just so fascinated by the Republican talking points, and they say this: the Affordable Care Act doesn't work. It just makes insurance companies richer. I hear that a lot, and they don't seem to glance over the whole fact that actually the Affordable Care Act, the way it was designed, was built on a plan from the Heritage Foundation, and that was something that Mitt Romney, when he was the Republican governor of Massachusetts, was able to create. So this was the Obamacare really took a Republican plan and took it because they thought this would at least be some sort of improvement to health care. And it did give so many more Americans health insurance. Health insurance coverage really increased under the ACA. From that view, it has been a massive success.
I mean, this is what's so funny about this talking point that, you know, Democrat-created health care subsidies have created this mess. But if that's really how Republicans feel, one, they have had the last 15, 16 years to do something about it. You know, we have been, the American people have been waiting on Republicans to come out with their plan to, you know, repeal and replace Obamacare. In fact, this was, you know, Texas's own Senator Ted Cruz gave a speech where he shut down the government over Affordable Care Act subsidies.
That's where he read Dr. Seuss.
Yes. But, you know, if this is the case, the governor, Greg Abbott, has appointed Cassie Brown, the Texas Insurance Commissioner, to regulate Affordable Care Act markets. You know, Affordable Care Act insurers that list plans on the Affordable Care Act exchange have to submit to the state for approval the rates that they are going to charge customers. If this is such a priority for Republicans, why doesn't Greg Abbott tell his appointee that she needs to make insurance companies lower their premiums? I mean, I just think there are so many other levers here. And the reality is that even if this is how you feel, if you as a Republican say, I don't want to pad the profits of insurance companies, fine, let's work together on that issue. But I don't think that's really what they are out to do, given the tax breaks that they give to these insurance companies, given the regulations that they roll back on drug prices, and all sorts of other regulations that they don't want to take part of. I think really what they would like to do is just make people go without health care. And that is confirmed by the fact that they spent all summer passing the largest cuts to Medicaid in the history of our country.
Also, the GOP has this, their favorite proposal now is for health savings accounts, in where the federal subsidies, they say it doesn't go to the Affordable Care Act for insurance plans. Instead, it goes directly to people for your health savings accounts, and you can use that to help pay for your health care, and that consumers are the best decision makers when it comes to their health care, and they say this empowers them. However, they don't really acknowledge the fact that this helps mainly people who are high upper income individuals and people who are lower income. This is really not a solution. Can you talk about, you know, this fascination, this fetish that they have with healthcare savings accounts, and why this is really, it sounds great on television when you have some senator talking about it, but when you actually need it, is it really going to help you be healthy?
I mean, I don't even know if it sounds great on television when you talk about it. If you as a parent take your kid to the playground and, you know, hope and pray that they don't break their arm on the monkey bars, $1,000 in a savings account is going to cover a fraction of your emergency room bill when they fall off the monkey bars. I really do think that this $1,000 health savings account proposal, maybe that would get you through your annual checkup at a true maximum. Because at a point where you're switching from insurance where, you know, reimbursements to physicians are regulated and negotiated, if you switch to completely, you know, out of network cash pay care, doctors can charge patients whatever they want for these services. And I think that, you know, if you go to your primary care physician, you get lab work done, maybe you have an x-ray, you're going to spend through that health savings account very
quickly. Right,
but
they keep saying that, you know, you'll be a consumer and you can shop around. You know, do you really get to shop around? It's like, I want my MRI at Joe's all night MRI, you know, taco stand, or do I go over here? I mean, it's not like that.
Yeah, I would love to see someone who's in the middle of having a heart attack, you know, flip through the yellow pages to figure out, you know, which hospital is going to be the cheapest, Baylor or Presby. But I think That also comes with an assumption that consumers have access to the information about the prices that physicians charge. It is not the case that you can just pull up the price sheet on the internet. It's a huge burden on consumers. And I just think that when we talk about something as basic as healthcare, do you really want to ask parents to call around and cut coupons for their kid to see a doctor? Or do we just want to make sure that kids can get the care that they need, or, grandma can get the care that she needs, that cancer patients can get their chemo treatments? I think it's just a vast, overestimate of what people have the time for. This is, akin to the conversation that's been happening for the better part of the last decade in Texas. I feel like every legislative session this comes up. Certainly, I grew up in Texas, and this was happening even when I was a kid. But the conversation around vouchers for schools, of, parents should be able to choose what school they'd like their kid to go to. And if you don't, if you can take your tax dollars with you, if you don't want to fund your local school, you can take those tax dollars to a private school or even a charter school. And parents have resoundingly rejected this. Teachers have resoundingly rejected it because
And
they want to make
communities
sure,
have.
yes, they want to make sure that everyone has access to high quality education, the basics, and it's the same for healthcare.
Well, we're going to go to a break right now. Our phone lines are open 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. I want to dig into the fundamental question, healthcare, is it a right or is it a commodity? Yeah, the Affordable Care Act has flaws. It's not great. The solution would be single payer universal health care. We're not there, but the unraveling, pushing ACA into a death spiral, which they're saying could happen if we don't get these extensions on these subsidies, and then what would we have then? So yeah, let's talk about that. 833-877-8255. The Source continues after this.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
As you reflect on the causes that matter to you this holiday season, consider supporting TPR. Throughout 2025, you relied on us for fair-minded journalism and thoughtful programming. Now, with federal funding for public media gone, your support is essential to keep TPR strong in the year ahead. Whether you make a one-time gift or become a sustaining supporter, you help ensure this service continues. Give online at tpr.org today.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about how Congress is not going to extend the Obamacare subsidies in time for the end of the year. What does that mean for people who need the ACA? It will also impact people who get their insurance from their workplace. This is going to impact the health care overall, health coverage overall. With us to help us understand all this is Elizabeth Pancotti, Managing Director of Policy and Advocacy at Groundwork Collaborative. And our number is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Gina on the phones. And Gina, thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm in a world of confusion because I first went to healthcare.gov, and the new premiums for me with a similar level of healthcare that I got last year would have been a little over $1,500. Previously, I was paying about $130 per month. So I then contacted the health
insurance
company.
Wait, wait, wait. Okay, so you're paying $130, and it went to $1,500?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. That's just, so I couldn't really believe it. That's why I needed to check. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So, yeah, that wouldn't be doable for me. So then I talked to my insurance company, and the agent I spoke with assured me that my new premiums for all of next year would be $213. And even when I questioned, we're waiting for U.S. Congress to pass, something to extend these subsidies. He mentioned that, his company was working hard to communicate to Congress, and they were very confident that that premium would be in effect for me for the entire year. So I didn't know whether to believe him or not. And when I went back to their own website, I actually found a premium that was even lower. I think it was like $169 or something for the same level of care. But when I go to healthcare.gov, I can't find anything like that. Huh. And I'm really afraid that I'm going to be caught stuck with this higher premium that I can't afford if I should sign up for what my health insurance company says my premium will be.
Wow. Gina, thank you for giving us an idea. This cannot be good for you. So much more stress and anguish unnecessary for you. I don't know. We can't give you any kind of advice or direction or anything, but your information is very valuable. Elizabeth Pancotti, what do you say to Gina?
Yeah, I mean, this is really the conundrum that a lot of folks are caught in. I won't ask you what your age is, but especially for folks in the kind of 55 to 64 age range, that is where the price hikes are the highest, just given, they are typically more costly to insure at that age. Just most folks have a higher cost of care. I would say reading the fine print on that website. So two things. One, for coverage that will go into effect on January 1st, we have passed the deadline, that was December 15th, to have coverage that will go into effect January 1st. Open enrollment is open through January 15th, and so you can still sign up for healthcare to begin February 1st. Some insurance companies do have kind of a grace period there, so really reading the fine print on that for coverage January 1 is important. But what I would recommend in your case in particular is it sounds like it sounds like the prices published on your insurance company's website may have some fine print under them that say this is assuming that the subsidies are extended by Congress. And so I would just really look for that fine print. And then I would note that, before you check out, before you put in your bank information or your credit card information, really looking at the amount that you will be charged. You can, of course, change your plan with Affordable Care Act policies up until January 15th. But I think really reading the fine print there, and I just want to, apologize. It is so unfortunate that you're in that situation. And I know millions of others are in your shoes, really stuck between a rock and a hard place, especially during the holiday season when so many are feeling crunched by high prices.
So Congress will come back in January and they can still pass these subsidies, and would they be able to push back deadlines and things?
Yes, that is the kind of assumption that if Congress comes back, they will have to take a vote on this bill that was this discharge petition, the 3-year extension of the subsidies. Right now, they're slated to come back that kind of first full week of January, starting the 5th. If they did that, it might take a little bit of time for things to progress through Congress. And obviously talks are likely to be ongoing throughout the next 2 weeks, even as members are back in their home districts. But one thing that could be on the table as part of that is an extension of open enrollment, that would not be unprecedented. There have been times in the past where Congress has acted to extend the open enrollment season, which of course also typically gives folks the opportunity to go back in and make a different decision in light of updated policy.
So it's got to get through the House, got to get through the Senate. Those are two big challenges. Then it's got to be signed by Trump. And yes, just what he was saying last night in that rampage, it didn't sound like he was open to it. And the Speaker is following his lead.
Yeah, I think that is kind of the whole mess of all of this. I think Donald Trump is very aware that 15 million people will lose their health insurance or pay skyrocketing premiums, and doesn't care, right? He could make a call over to Congress right now and say, before you head out of town, you need to extend these, and everyone would fall in line under him. And he has chosen to stand in the way of that.
Let's go to Randall on the phones. Randall, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Russell, and I'm a retired pharmacist. You can hear me?
Yes, sir, Russell. Sorry about the name.
Okay. Yes, retired pharmacist. I started in the early 80s. Our cost of inventory was around $25,000 it cost in the pharmacy. When I retired, which has been a number of years ago now, they wanted us to stay below $500,000, and we could not stay in business without $800,000 worth of inventory on those same pharmacy shelves. The ACA is a fantastic item to give access to health care, but it did very little to nothing about cost. The collusion we have with the manufacturers and the insurance companies, along with the same thing with diagnostic tests and everything else, is not working. I'm an unapologetic capitalist, but you have to have an informed buyer and seller, as you were referred to in the conversation, and it's not working.
Yeah. Russell, thank you for the call. We appreciate your insight. Just real quickly, Elizabeth, because I want to get to another call. Anything you want to add to Russell?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. There is so much broken in our pharmaceutical supply chain, especially now that the large insurers have taken over some of those pharmacy benefit managers, and in, you know, CVS Aetna's case, even the pharmacy itself. I think the thing I would highlight is that, unfortunately, we know that 1 in 5 adults over 65 report skipping doses, delaying refills, or using someone else's medication because of cost, which is just an entirely broken system if we have that many people going out without the care that they
need. We could do so much better, you know? Let's go to Adam. Adam, you're on the phone. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you. I've always had insurance through my company, and of course, over the years, it's gotten more and more and more expensive, so I reduced my coverage lower and lower every year, but it was like $550 a month. My fiance has had coverage through mental health stuff, which is now, with all the changes that have happened, she got dropped. My kids have always had been able to do chips just at different amounts throughout the years as my income increased, but they got dropped, and now we don't qualify for anything. I couldn't get them added to my insurance because it went through the roof. Just to add it, one kid is the same as four, and it was like almost $700. So I signed up for the ACA thing and went through an agent. They found a loophole, or I don't know what it is, but they're telling me that if my total insurance coverage cost was more than 10.2% of my income, that I would qualify for the subsidies and tax credits.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth, is that true?
Yeah, so there is a base level of subsidies and tax credits that were enacted as part of the original Affordable Care Act, and then those were enhanced by first the American Rescue Plan in 2021, and then a second time by the Inflation Reduction Act the following year. There are still those baseline level of subsidies are still available. They are just much lower and often just help cover bronze level plans, which have high out-of-pocket expenses. And so I think the important thing to note here is that there are still subsidies available for some folks. It really depends on your income level and the plan that you're choosing, but it is not the case that all subsidies are going away. But I suspect that once you logged in to look at your healthcare options for next year, that prices were a lot higher than this year. And that is as a result of the expiration of those enhanced subsidies.
All right, I'm going to try and just get Randall on for 1 minute. Randall, I'm going to give you a minute, and do we still have him? No, we lost him. All right, so the idea that there could be a death spiral, I've got about 2 minutes here. If these subsidies are not extended, this could crash the Affordable Care Act. It could really hurt the overall healthcare system, push people back into not being insured, getting their healthcare from emergency rooms, driving up the cost of healthcare overall, even for people who have private insurance. Is that a future that we could have, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I mean, our healthcare industry sector is so intertwined, and especially with the Medicaid cuts that are set to go into effect over the next few years. You know, I think that so many rural hospitals are in jeopardy. In Texas in particular, a lot of the healthcare systems are for-profit or private equity owned. And as all of that teeters, we are kind of on the brink of a real collapse of our entire system, which will unfortunately mean that people go without care, that hospitals in their neighborhoods and their communities close, forcing them to drive further to doctor's appointments and healthcare. The whole thing is really interconnected, and unfortunately could also really affect people's jobs, as either employers are forced to cover higher costs for health insurance premiums for the employees they have, which we know depresses wages and pay raises. And for so many of the jobs in the healthcare industry, as doctors and hospitals are forced to cut positions in those, which, you know, just reverberates throughout.
So the stakes are very, very high. People need to speak out, tell their Congress people to do their jobs. Elizabeth Pancotti, Managing Director of Policy and Advocacy at Groundwork Collaborative. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.